Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast, alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. Now, we have a lot to talk about, Mets and Yankees related, but I want to let Joe open this up with some of his Yankee stuff, because we got some good, we got some bad, and we got some potentially upsetting. So Joe, lead us off. What do you got?
Well, you know, Mike, I always like to start with the bad just to get it out of the way. So we have Luis Hill, Rookie of the Year for 2024, shoulder tightness. Not the best news you want to hear, especially because it wasn't even in the middle of the game. It was actually in a bullpen session, so he didn't even get to pitch. He's getting an MRI scheduled for earlier this evening, maybe tomorrow. We're not sure, and we don't even know how bad this is, Mike. So this is a little bit concerning, 100%. And to Marcus Stroman, it looks like for the fifth starter spot in the rotation, you know, there's a potential for Will Warren to potentially come up and maybe pitch out of the bullpen. We'll see what Cookie Carrasco could possibly do. Maybe he gets called up to eat some innings. But no, that's definitely not the way we want to start, Mike, especially in the middle of spring training. You're trying to get these guys reps, and now Hill's going to be... he's going to be down.
Right. As far as the potentially upsetting with him, I mean, listen, we don't know what the injury is yet. Like we said, he's going to get the MRI, or he's gotten it already, and we should have further news fairly shortly and figure out where we're at with that. So that's at least the potentially upsetting. All right, so now, listen, you touched on a few guys here. Will Warren, if you want to jump on him.
Yeah, Will Warren has been he's been excellent. It's been nice to see, because he had a tough year last year and a couple of starts. He had over 10 ERA. It was 10.32. His whip was almost 2. It was 1.91. He really struggled. And you know, rightfully so. It's you know, you don't expect these rookies to come in dazzling all the time, even though you'd love them to. It's just not going to work that way sometimes. So he had some growing pains. His first couple of starts were not good. But this spring, he's looked completely different. It's a complete 180 of a pitcher. He looks a lot more relaxed. His stuff looks electric. In five innings, he's given up no runs. So that's a great, you know, great start. He's going to get a couple more outings to go. So we'll see what happens. He may be an option out of the bullpen, like I said, because it looks like Stroman's not going to come out of the pen, as he's already alluded to. And then from there, you know, you have the depth. You have Cookie Carrasco you can lean on. You have Will Warren you can lean on as a young guy. He's 25, so this is kind of make or break for him. You know, in the next couple of years, he's probably not going to make it, or this is his time to shine. So the Yankees have, you know, a couple of guys that they can lean on. And like I said, you don't want to really have to experience this quick into spring, but that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and now listen, at least for me, so far with you guys, you know, watching your spring training games, Will Warren has been the guy that's, you know, had my eye on. He's been the most impressive so far, but listen, it's still early. He's only got 5 innings under his belt. And, you know, listen, we'll see where he's at, maybe a little more battle-tested throughout spring. Let's see when he gets himself into trouble, how he gets out of it. Does he remain poised? Does he stay locked in? You know, that's really what you want to see. You know, it's nice to see that his stuff looks great right now, and that's the early signs to maybe a solid spring training. But we want to see what happens when maybe on a day he really doesn't have it. He's not locating his fastball. He's not whatever he might be. He doesn't have the right spin on some of his pitches. That'll determine really where he's at, and that'll be more impressive to see, and something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely you know, like I said, like it's been a 180. He's been very, very good in the spring, and it's probably going to help Aaron Boone, you know, with the depth. If they have to call him up, he'll be a guy that you could lean on. But to get away from the bad news, we have some good news. I think Cody Bellinger has looked really good. He's hitting .500 early in the spring. Get his first home run earlier against Toronto. We have Spencer Jones hitting .300, even though he's probably not going to see major league time yet. He's definitely looking good in the spring. He's hit off a couple of nice shots to start the spring. And we have Oswald Peraza hitting .333 in a couple of games. And he made a nice defensive play also against Toronto. Beautiful play to his left, and he looked really comfortable, so that's pretty good. I know it was at shortstop. He made the play, which is probably going to be Volpe, obviously, but it's good to see that he looks like he could be somebody that you could trust defensively, because it looks like he may get some playing time, Mike, now that Stanton is out and there's a couple of spots that you could fill, or potentially at third base. You know, DJ LeMahieu is going to be there as well, and if he's not healthy, you got Peraza. So, you know, again, these guys look really good. I know it's early, but you want to see some of these guys definitely get the reps and look good to start the spring.
Yeah, and listen, the thing with Spencer Jones, I know, I think last season he was in the MLB top 100 for prospects, and he didn't make the list this year. So that's a little, maybe he's got a chip on his shoulder this year. Look, I don't see him breaking camp. I don't think he makes the big league roster right away. He needs a little work. He's got to bring that strikeout rate down. You know, he's got incredible power to all fields. You know, he's a very solid bat, but he's got to bring that K rate down if he's going to sniff the majors. Because if he does come up, you know, major league pitching compared to AAA pitching is a whole nother level.
And you're 100% right. And his comment the other day kind of bothered me when he said he felt dangerous. Listen, you had two good games. Stop it. Honestly, listen. And I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm high on Spencer Jones. I think he's going to be a pretty good ball player. But you know, let's save that for let's save that trash talk for the major leagues when you're raking in the major leagues.
Yeah, like you said, listen, he's a very high upside, but he's got some issues, like we said, at the plate. So we'll see how that works out. I know you mentioned Peraza. Listen, given the injury to Stanton, you don't know also what you're going to get from DJ. I think I've said this line a few times, and I'm going to say this over and over again. I have studied Wilpon economics for a very long time. And here's the thing. If you're paying him, you're playing him. So I'm going to say that DJ will start the season at third base unless something catastrophic happens or if he genuinely looks terrible.
I agree with you because he's got 2 years left in that deal, Mike. What are you going to do? You're going to shelve him for 2 years? You can't. No, if he's healthy enough to play, he's going to play. And I agree with you. He's probably going to get the majority of the reps at third.
Yeah. But you want to see, you know, these guys like Cabrera and Peraza, you want to see them force their way into this lineup. Because, you know, the biggest thing to do or, you know, the thing you can't ignore is when a guy is hot. How do you not play the hot hand? You know, and I know everything with this new generation and everything is analytics, analytics, analytics. Well, we have a lot of gaffes when analytics don't work. And listen, there are times that it does, and I don't know the numbers offhand.
Nobody goes by the gut anymore, Mike. It's all about what you've done in the past on a piece of paper.
Right. And, you know, look, you want these kids to show what they're capable of. You want them to force themselves into the lineup. And obviously, listen, you guys are pretty much, the fans are definitely tired of DJ LeMahieu. It's unfortunate how things have unfolded there because, you know, when he was a free agent, it was like the fan base was going crazy if you guys wouldn't re-sign him. And now it's like, ugh.
Yeah, really? Stuck. Now we're like, oh my God, we're going to be stuck for the next 2 years. That's how it's looking. That's how it's really, and listen, the money was a good thing. $15 million a year for 6 years. It looked like a steal. And now the last three, it's looking like we're getting robbed.
Yeah, so. I mean, listen, I said this to a friend of mine specifically in the past that I had a feeling that DJ was going to turn out to be the right-handed version of Daniel Murphy. You know, lit it up for a couple of years after he left the Mets with the Nationals. He had two monster seasons. And then he pretty much fell off a cliff, and it just kept falling. And that seems to be what's happening with DJ.
And when you get those hip injuries like DJ had, that's where you really get affected. Yes. It's something that you really can't overcome. I mean, you're just never the same when you get that initial hip injury. And that's what happened to DJ, unfortunately. And that's what we're kind of dealing with right now.
Yeah. You know, listen, like you said, there's been some pretty good bright spots. And there's been some low points so far with you guys. I know you got another one with Oldie over there. He's not starting off so hot.
No, he had a good first game. He had an RBI double, but he's hitting 200 right now. He looks like he's pressing in his last three games that the Yankees have played. I watched the games, and I was following along, and it just looks like he's trying to impress in the new threads right now. He's just he's probably just trying to shake off a little bit of rust that he had from the offseason. I'm not 100% scared right now. I'll let you know when I'm getting really nervous, but like I said, it's still early in the spring, but yeah, he does look like he's pressing a little bit, but hopefully he just he snaps out of it, and I think he'll be okay. You know, we have Oswaldo Cabrera, too. He's hitting 170 to start off in the spring, and these guys look like they're going to be big pieces, too, in the lineup now that Stanton's out. So, like I said, I'm not worried yet. I'll be worried in a couple of weeks if they look like they're still struggling in the spring.
Well, listen, given what Oldie is potentially capable of in this situation, I can't stop doing it. Listen,
This man won an MVP at 35, okay? So, show some respect to your elders.
No, look, I'm playing playing around with it. I'm having some fun with it. Look, I've been a major Paul Goldschmidt fan, you know, throughout his entire career. I've watched him. Phenomenal ball player, but it's just, you know, it's my little banter that I want to say. So
but it makes sense. He's definitely old.
I'm calling him oldie. Listen, I don't know if anybody else has done it, but you heard it here first. Now, as far as what you're going to get from oldie is the fact that, you know, just about anything he gives you is better than, you know, what you got last season. I mean, you guys did your best Abbott and Costello impersonation by playing who's on first. Now, I think you probably, at some points, probably could have just threw a cap and glove and laid it on first base this year. It would have somehow been better.
We were brutal at first base.
Yeah. You know, so, look, anything from him is going to be an upgrade to what you guys had last year. And, again, that's sort of that Wilpon economics thing that I've been talking about, because I dealt with all that. So, believe me, I understand your struggles and pain with that. But, look, like we've mentioned, you've had some bright spots and you've had some low points and some low situations here. But, again, it's still early. What are we, 5-6 games in officially?
Yeah, really. And today was Cole's first game today as well. Yeah. He looked good. Judge hasn't even played yet. Austin right. Wells actually played for the first time. So these guys didn't even get their reps until today. Right. So
I mean, the Yankees haven't even had the chance to grow their beard yet.
So right.
Just take it easy, you know? But, look, moving on maybe to the Mets now a little bit, because in a similar fashion, we have some good, some bad, and some potentially upsetting. Now, since our last episode, the potentially upsetting is going to be the injury to Sean Manaea. He's gone down with an oblique strain, and it's looking like he's not going to make it back till about mid-April, maybe late April. Could be early May. Listen, time will tell with that. The oblique is, you know, it's an injury that just keeps you out, and there's really not much you can do about it. So it's just rest. I'm not necessarily worried. To the Met fans that are now hitting the panic button that want to get on the phone and call San Diego, stop it, please, because this is desperation stuff. You know, this is why, and I'm going to pound this into the ground. This is why you have depth, especially with pitching. You know, look, they went out and signed Jose Urena, a guy that could do jump in the bullpen. He could give you a couple of spot starts. He's versatile. You know, he's not Marcus Stroman that's going to tell you nine times over that he's a starter is a starter. You know, he has the ability to go either way there. Now, listen, you're going to get some shared time with probably some Paul Blackburn, some Griffin Canning. We're obviously going to see Tyler McGill. But, like I said, this is not panic button. This is not desperation. This is not call up San Diego and get fleeced for a guy who's a one-year rental, who's never even been in top three for the Cy Young. So I'm not looking to give up my top pieces for a guy that may or may not put us over the top. I'm just not in for that. Especially, you know, I know it's been floated about going to get Quintana again. Listen, the problem with that, at least with me, is you don't make a permanent solution to a temporary situation. And that's what we're in at this point.
And that's a good point to make, because I know a lot of fans looking at it are saying, oh my God, we can't have our number two guy go down right now. This is not good. Oh, listen, of course it's not good. You don't want the guy to be hurt. But you caught it at a good time, Mike. Thank God he got this injury now, because if this was mid-June, July, the start of August, and you're at the you know, the back end of a pennant race, and you're trying to fight for a division, fight for a wild card, whatever it is to get to the playoffs, you want Manaea there. If you get that injury in June, July, he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. Like you just said, it's one of those injuries that you need R&R. It's rest and recuperation. There's not much you could do. He's going to be on the shelf in June, July. You don't want that. You want that now in February. If he misses 5 or 6 starts, you could live with that. You could live with Manaea coming back in May. You could live with a guy like Blackburn, a guy like Griffin Canning, a guy like Urania, like you just mentioned, coming out of the pen maybe, eating up some innings for a couple of weeks, a month. That's fine. Met fans should not hit the panic button, just the way the Yankee fans shouldn't hit the panic button on Luis Hill. We don't know what it's going to be. We have Stroman. We have Carrasco. The Mets have their guys, Canning, Blackburn. I don't think anybody should panic yet, because it's still early.
Right. And listen, guys, just do me a favor. With some of the stuff we're talking about, throw some questions at us. Hit us up on our Instagram, DiamondDiscussions25. We post every time we make a new podcast episode, and we do something funny to equate to the episode we have put out there. Also on Twitter, if you could do the same name, same handle, DiamondDiscussions25. Reach out to us, drop a couple questions, and we're going to answer them. Speaking of which, I do have a question that was posted on our last episode. I'm going to get to you fairly shortly. Just give me some time. But, we'll talk about that later on. But in other news with the Mets, now, you know, this is maybe the good side of it. And again, to you Yankee fans that want to keep laughing at us because we signed Clay Holmes to be a starter, stop it. Clay Holmes has looked fairly good. In six innings, he's only given up a hit. He struck out five, only walked one, and he's also developed his new pitch, the kick change, that a few guys around Major League Baseball are starting to experiment. I know Andres Munoz, out of the closer out in Seattle.
Seattle, yeah.
He's also experimenting with the pitch now.
The pitch looks disgusting, by the way.
And yeah, it does. And Holmes needed this. He needed to balance himself when he faces left-handers because, you know, his sinker is not going to do it against lefties. It's devastating against righties. And listen, he could work it in there, sneaking in with the lefties, but he can't dominate with that. And, you know, I know he's got the slurve, a little bit of a slider action. Now he just adds another pitch to his repertoire. But at this point, he does look good. But I'm going to say, to the same respect that I gave Will Warren, I want to see when Clay Holmes maybe loses a little bit. Does he stay poised? Does he stay in the moment? Does he stay, you know, does he lose it? That's important to me. Right now, he's working out his kinks with his new pitch, and he's mixing it in, and it looks very good. But I want to see a little more battle test to that. I want to see this, you know, develop to a situation. I want a first inning where a couple of guys get on. Maybe he walks a guy, hits a batter, gives up a double, whatever it is. I want to see when he's in trouble. How does he respond?
Well, listen, and like I've seen this as a Yankee fan before, he's been in some trouble, but it's been at different points of the game. He's usually brought in into high leverage spots, eighth inning, ninth inning, the game is tied or they're up by a run, and then he gets into a little trouble and he had a meltdown. But it's a different ball game now, literally and figuratively speaking. You're coming in as a starter. You're starting the game, it's a different mentality, right? So the question is, how much is he going to get through? How many innings can he eat up per start? If he could get five or six, great. I don't think it's going to happen right off the jump, Mike. I don't think he's going to go five or six. I think if he could get you three or four, awesome. I've never seen him go 50, 60 pitches. And he may have to get that to last four or five innings. Like I said, you have to build up for that. And like I said, he'll do fine. He'll get there eventually. It's going to take a couple of months before he gets that strength. But if he has a bad start and it affects the bullpen, that could be the problem. That's where the problem lies. Now that you don't have Manaea, you don't have Montas, you got to rely on a Blackburn. You have to rely on a guy like Urania. What's going to happen? We don't know. It's everything is a crapshoot. You're going to hope that Jeremy Hefner could really figure something out here, because if he has that one bad start, it's going to affect the pen for the whole week, and then you got guys that you can't use, and you got to play mix and match. Hopefully, Holmes is, you know, this other pitch just adds a little bit of an arsenal, you know, some bullets in the gun, as you could say, and he has a little bit more of an arsenal to go off of. But it's a 50-50 thing. We don't know what's going to happen, really.
Well, I'm gonna disagree with you. I don't think he's going to be starting the season only giving you three or four innings. I think you're going to see five or six. You're going to see relatively in the area of a quality start, you know, given what he does in that game, the runs he gives up, hits, and all that. So like I said, so far I like what I see, but I need to see a little more. He's been stretching out early. You know, he's thrown a lot more. You know, his first spring start, I'm going to say he probably has the most innings pitched so far in spring, outside of maybe a couple of relievers. You know, but he's gone three both starts, and, you know, again, both against the Astros. The second time out was a little more impressive to me because the Astros had more of a full lineup and more of their major league talent. In there, you know, and he did pitch very well. Another bright spot for me has been Francisco Alvarez. And my biggest thing with him is his batting stances seem to have changed. He's a little more relaxed. He seems a little more confident. He's not maybe bouncing around as much. He's a little more just where he needs to be. He's made a big adjustment for the fact that he was driving me nuts in the playoffs last year, because it was almost a guarantee that he was going to swing at the first pitch. And it was every at bat he comes up, and what did I say? Stop it. Because that's all he would do, and it was driving me crazy. I haven't really seen that from him. He's a little more collected, a little more calm. He's working counts. His strikeout rate is still up there, you know, but it's a work in progress, and this kid is young. I'm not necessarily, you know, running to the hills yet, but I'm also not burying my head in the sand either. So,
but it's good to see that he's making the adjustment, like you said. He needed to make the adjustment. He was putting himself in an early hole. you swing at the first pitch, you're either going to be out quick or you're going to be down 0-1. And that's what it seemed like. It seemed like he was either down in the count early or he was getting out on the first pitch, not even giving himself a chance to work the count and see a better pitch in the at-bat. I think he was getting a little fastball happy too, Mike. I think he would, maybe the first fastball he'd see,
he was trying to jump on
whatever was coming his way. And honestly, you could throw a pitch 20 feet off the plate, he was going after it.
Yeah.
And when I was watching some of the Met playoff games, I was like, why does he look like he's swinging at the first pitch every time? And he literally was swinging at the first pitch every time. And it was kind of a thing in the playoffs that, you know, Mets fans were getting mad at. They were like, why is this guy putting himself in these holes early in the count when he was a guy that, like, was a big piece, you know, and he could really affect the lineup in a positive way. And he was just putting himself in an early hole. I think he was just pressing, and yeah, it was just early playoff struggles, you know, trying to do too much, which is perfectly fine. He's so young. Those guys, they're gonna go through that. They're gonna go through the ebbs and flows of the game.
And he was trying to make
something happen. That's all he was trying to do.
Yeah, and you know what? He seems to live for that. He wants that. He wants that electricity in that moment. It seems like he wants to be in that moment, but he just hasn't found the way to capitalize on it and stay poised and not swing out of his shoes. Listen, another one that has impressed me so far, but I'm a little more reserved with it because I've been down this road. I've seen this movie before. Brett Baty. Now, you don't want him coming out struggling because you don't want this kid to press more than I feel like he has. But, you know, look, he's done this. He comes up to the majors, struggles very badly, goes down to AAA, lights it up, and it's like, what's going on? And then it's just rinse and repeat. You know, listen, right now he's 6 out of 11. He's hit 2 home runs. He's looked very good, but...
And of course you'd have this problem. And you forget this is at third. So what do you do with this kid, Mike? Is he a trade bait now? Is he a trade chip because he's playing so good in spring? Where do you put? I don't even know what other positions he can play, just because I haven't, I guess, really been following Brett Baty so closely. But where does he fit?
You know what? I think it's going to come down to the fact you have 3 young kids that are going to be, you know, fighting for spots, and it's just pushing motivation. You got Acuna, you got Mauricio, and you got Baty. Now Baty might have something to prove. And, you know, who knows? Who knows who he's working with and what he's trying to accomplish and what he's trying to get done. But I think he's tired of this up and down thing. I don't know if he has another situation where he struggles as bad as he's done in the past. It could be the end for him in a Met.
As a Met, yeah.
It could be.
Because I think the higher on Mauricio, is that safe to say?
Yeah.
So
but
if
listen,
the minute the
minute that ACL test,
right, so, you know, but they're still high on him, and the minute Baty struggles, it's a wrap for him. Like you said, I think I don't know where, and I think them re-signing Alonso actually made him the odd man out because he would have played third if Vientos would have went to first.
I think that could have been. I think you could have slid maybe Acuna in that spot again. Mauricio, when he gets back healthy, I don't think he's going to break camp with the Mets though. Baty might. I think it's a battle. I think Acuna is probably your safest pick out of the 3 that will probably break camp with this team. But, you know, listen, between Baty and Mauricio, it's just a chance for Mauricio to fully get healthy because we're close. But he's not going to be ready for opening day. He's not going to be on the roster. At least I don't think. I think he's more mid-season or early season call up there. But it's going to be nice to see these 3 young guys, these infield guys, battle it with each other, you know, maybe have something to prove to one another, to themselves. You know, I mean, listen, Acuna looked great last year. I thought he should have got a little more playing time in the playoffs, but there was a lot of other guys that were hitting that you just couldn't ignore. So I did understand it. But, you know, I'm excited to see that. And listen, another young infielder that, you know, was a part of the Verlander trade, Ryan Clifford. Now, he hasn't started off so hot. He's been 1-for-8 so far, and his only hit has been a home run. And, you know, the Mets organization is very high on him that he could be the successor at first base if Pete Alonso chooses to opt out. And maybe we don't go after Vlad Jr., but that's remain to be seen. You know, we'll see how that all plays out. You know, but with Clifford, you know, again, they're high on him. I think some of these guys, the Acunas, the Gilbert, the Clifford, the guys that Cohen spent big money to bring in by eating the Verlander and the Scherzer deal.
Yeah, those guys are going to get the reps.
I think they're going to, listen, Cohen is going to do everything in his power to get everything out of them possible before he either gives up or trades them. And if he does trade them, he's getting a monster piece in return because he spent big money to get this young talent.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And like you said, they could use it as a trade bargaining chip. And maybe Baty becomes a trade chip in the future for a pitcher. Who knows? Well, like I said, it looks like he could be the odd man out. Even if he starts playing well, he looks like he could potentially be the odd man out.
Yeah, and listen, the last, I guess, bright spot so far that we've seen, Brandon Sproat made his debut in spring, pitched 2 innings, struck out 1, didn't give up a hit, didn't give up a walk. And you know what?
I know Met fans are dying. I think you got to leave him in the minors. Yeah, let him marinate. Let him get the work. I know it's you want to see the next best thing. It's this is New York, right? You want to see the next best thing come out and light up the city on fire, right? This kid may do that. Give him some time. You have Blackburn. You have Canning. This is it's like you said. You don't want to bring this kid up too early and kind of ruin things and rush the progress. So, you know, play your cards now what you have and let this kid figure it out in the minors.
Right. And you know what? I listened to Jeremy Hefner about a week ago. He brought up Sproat's struggles in AAA because, listen, he lit it up on every level. High school, college, A ball, double A ball. He was just blowing the ball past everybody. And then he got to AAA. And in 28 and a third innings, he had a 7.5 ERA.
Right.
Not what you want to see from one of your top pitching prospect in the organization. But the other side to this coin is what Jeremy Hefner brought up is the fact that he got humbled a little bit. Because at the AAA level, you're not blowing it by guys like you were in the lower tier levels. And like I said, in college and in high school. You know, so he had to kind of take a step back and kind of reevaluate things. And I think that's what I saw from him today because I didn't think he really tried to blow the ball past anybody. He did in his one strikeout. He hit 99 on the gun, caught the outside. It was a beautiful pitch. And he just has that swagger. It seems like he has almost that, I really don't want to say it, but sort of that Matt Harvey-esque to him a little bit.
No, he definitely looked good, man. He definitely he's got the looked personality good. Too. He does, and he looked a lot more comfortable, like you said, in the last couple of starts that he's had. So that's definitely a good sign because he's definitely a top prospect and a big pitching piece that could be potentially with the ball club in the next couple of years, maybe even sooner, rather than later. But like I said, don't rush this kid. You know, don't ruin this kid. Let the kid marinate in the minors. Let him get the work in. Let him start feeling comfortable. And there's going to be a spot for him on the rotation at some point in his career, I think.
Right. Now, guys, again, with everything we've talked about so far between some of the bright spots, some of the potentially upsetting spots, and some of the good, negative spots here, listen, reach out to us on our Instagram, DiamondDiscussions25. You know, we're going to have our post up about it. Throw something in the comments. Talk to us. Yeah. Even in the comments on the actual podcast, you guys can do that.
And reach out to us on X, too. We're on X, Discussions25. So, you know, reach out to us. We'd love to hear your feedback, guys, really. Just to keep it going, I just want to make some points about Jason Dominguez.
Well, by all means.
I am a little concerned with the left field play. At this point, it feels like every ball that goes to him, you got to hold your breath. I didn't want to say that a couple of weeks ago because obviously it was a little premature to say, oh my God, hit the panic button. Now I'm starting, my hand is hovering over the panic button, Mike. I'm starting to get a little nervous. I'm starting to feel like Bellinger should be in left, and I'm starting to feel like Dominguez needs to be in center. Why? Because he is just not looking comfortable. I don't like when people don't look comfortable. Mm-hmm. The kid is a natural center fielder. That's what he is. Bellinger can play all three outfield spots, including first. He's very versatile. Mm-hmm. Why is he not in left? I don't know why. I really don't know why the Yankees put this kid in left field. I don't understand why this wasn't something that was done way before this year. This should have been worked on last year. This wasn't worked on as much last year. He was kind of thrown into that role and was atrocious when he was playing left last year, the couple of times that he played. The few plays that he's attempted to make in left field have looked like I fell asleep playing during the show. It looks like just running towards the wall, completely misjudging balls. It hit his glove. He just looks like he's completely lost out there. He goes and plays center. He looks like he's completely different. I don't know why we tried to reinvent the wheel. It's very odd. I think it's going to affect his hitting if this keeps up. I'm a little concerned.
I think maybe it's a little too premature, but I do get the concerns because he's had the problems last year as well. I don't get it either, if I'm being honest with you. Maybe they just see Bellinger as a far superior center fielder to Dominguez, and you don't know what you're going to get from him at the plate. But the thing is, with Dominguez, I mean, if you guys remember, I don't know how many out there, you know, collect baseball cards and everything, but the chase just to get his first Bowman card. I mean, you know, this guy has been highly touted from the moment he joined the organization.
And offensively, he looks like he has all the tools. He could steal a bag. He could hit for power. He actually has a very good eye. He walks a pretty decent amount. throughout his early in his professional career in the minors and everything like that. But that's going to affect him if he's not playing defense well. If he's not playing defense well, he's going to have more pressure to perform offensively, and you don't want to do that in his first full season now in the Bronx. He's going to be playing every day in the outfield. And you're going to put this much pressure on him now to learn a complete... Listen, I understand the professionals, and a lot of fans are saying, oh, it doesn't matter, he should be able to play the position. Some guys aren't like that. Not everybody is Alex Rodriguez, where you could shift from shortstop to third, or move from, like Bryce Harper, moving from right to first. Not everybody is that good. Some people need to just be where they are, and I don't understand what the Yankees saw in moving a guy like Dominguez to left field. I just don't understand why. And a guy like Bellinger, who has literally said he'll play anywhere, get him in left. Give him some reps in left. Let's see how he does. He's played left before. He's done perfectly fine. And like I said, Dominguez is a complete 180 different player in center. I just don't know why we reinvented the wheel here.
Yeah, my thing is, and look, I don't want to go crazy on this, but I feel like I have to. Why are you setting up your guys for failure?
Yeah, that's what I feel like it is right now.
You sign a guy like Marcus Stroman, who is a ground ball pitcher who needs a defense. You don't give him a defense. He fails and looks terrible. You have a situation with Clay Holmes, not a closer. You're forced to put him in the closer role. Again, ground ball pitcher, doesn't have a defense behind him. And out of the 12 saves he blew last year, I want to say 5 or 6 were practically on the defense. Now, the other situation is you have the Martian, who you want this kid to succeed, and you want him to put himself in the best position possible, and now you're trying to change his position, and you're giving him reps out there, and right now, it's not working. Unless he just completely finds it, which, again, remains to be seen, because the kid is young. Can he find it? Absolutely. He's an athlete, and, you know, he's high, very highly touted. So, like you said, he's going to have that pressure. But why are you setting him up to fail? I just don't understand. You're going to, like you said, you're going to put way more pressure on him. He's going to, you think he's not going to press a little bit being in the Bronx? He's had some success at the plate. You know, he's looked fairly good when he first came up. You know, but he's dealt with an injury, and now you're throwing him into a situation where you could be throwing him to the wolves here, because you don't think that if this kid makes a couple errors in the first 2 weeks that the New York media is going to bury him with how he's played? If he loses a game for you in left field, the media is going to destroy this kid.
And listen, we did it with Soto. When Soto was playing bad in the playoffs in the outfield, Yankee fans were saying it. They were saying, wow, you know, Soto cost us a couple of games. What happens now if you have a guy that's young and is in a position where he doesn't even play? Left field is, like we just said, is not his spot. What are we supposed to do? Are we going to get on this kid and destroy him and boo him out of the stadium? That's what's going to happen. It's literally what's going to happen. And I just don't understand where... I don't know if this was a Cashman thing. I don't know if this was a Boone thing. But this was not the right idea to me. This was something that didn't need to happen. He could have been in center field. Bellinger could have been left. You could have Judge in right, and everything would have been hunky dory. The kid would have been comfortable, and now it's every at bat is going to be more pressure to have to perform to overlook the offense. He is not Juan Soto. Juan Soto could make the defense that he plays in the grand scheme of things. It's not that big of a deal, right? Because Soto could hit. Dominguez, we haven't seen that yet. We haven't seen that from Dominguez yet. Soto could hide those defensive inefficiencies. You know what I mean? With his bat. Dominguez? Yeah, we're hoping his bat does that. But we don't know yet because he hasn't had a full season yet. And now you're putting him in a position, like I said, to potentially fail. And what are you going to say? Oh, we're going to trade you now because you didn't perform. Well, if you didn't put him in left, maybe he'd be okay in center field. I'm really not happy about it, Mike. I'm really not happy about it.
Listen, I feel your frustration. I think I wouldn't be easy either. But listen, you brought it up, so I'm jumping all over it. Did you happen to see what Juan Soto did against the Nationals?
Oh, yeah. And the facial expression before?
Oh, my God. That was incredible. That reminded me of, almost, to an extent. I know, listen, it's spring training. I'm not jumping all over this.
ALCS, Game 5.
It's just, he knew he had you.
Yeah.
Guys, please, it's all over the place. It's all over Instagram. I'm sure you've seen it 100 times. I've watched it 100 times because it's just, wow.
Stop throwing him strikes.
All right, fine. Let him walk and have it 1,000 on base.
That is the Juan Soto scouting report. Stop throwing strikes. Literally, throw a pitch 20 feet out of the zone and let him chase and get a base
hit. He's not going to do that.
I know, but you know what? If he gets a hit and he pokes his bat out there, you could say, you know what? That's a great at bat. You can't throw this guy good pitches. Stop it. Is that what we're trying to do here? We're yelling at people? Stop throwing him strikes. Even as a Yankee fan, when he was a Yankee, I was like, the fact that pitchers throw this man strikes is unbelievable to me. You're not going to strike him out. Just stop it. Stop doing that. Let him figure, let him go to the plate and have to beat you. You're letting him literally do his thing without having to do his thing. It's like putting I don't even know what how to explain it. The guy is just a beast. Stop throwing this guy strikes already.
It was, you know, and again, it reminded me of the at-bat in the ALCS because, you know, he interviewed about it, I think, a day or two ago, and they asked him, when did you know you had him? And he said, he threw me an inside changeup, and I just missed it. Went back into the box. I stood up just a little bit, and it was just...
And he crushed the fastball completely out.
I mean, when this guy knows he has you, he does, and he makes these adjustments. It's really unbelievable. I really hope, and listen, his on-base percentage and seeing what he does at the plate is fantastic. It really is. But I would love to see him in that attack mode, that I know I got you. Go ahead. Do it.
Really?
Please, do it. I feel like it's the Starsky and Hutch movie with Ben Stiller. Do it. Do it. Like, I mean, he's daring you, and you fall for it. And if you don't, if you throw that pitch in the dirt, guess what? He's going to shuffle on you a little bit, yep. And it's going to frustrate you even more.
And pitches, like I said, if you see Juan Soto make a face...
It's over.
...towards you...
It's over.
...about a pitch that he fouled off, or maybe that was a little off the plate, or you got a strike call, do me a favor, stop throwing a strike on the next pitch. It's going to wind up in the left field seats or the right field seats, and you're going to have whiplash all year. Stop throwing strikes to this guy. It's really simple. Get him on base. That's what you have to do. Walk him. It's like a Bonds thing. If the bases are loaded and it's a 3-2 game, walk in the tying run. Because you have a better chance of facing Vientos. Honestly,
that's crazy to say. And you know what's even more wild? This guy hasn't even reached his prime yet. We're just getting started.
He's still in his mid-20s.
It's incredible. It really is incredible.
He's got numbers that you would think he's 15 years in the league. No, he's only 7 years in the league. That's what's crazy about it.
No, well, he came up, what, he was 18, 19
yeah.
years old?
Yeah, he's 26 years old.
It's insane. It's insane to see what he's been capable of so far, and he's not even in his prime yet. We're just getting started. This kid's career could be something we haven't seen in this era, in our generation. You know, look, I know Yankee fans try to pretend that, you know, they're not upset that this guy is gone, but after seeing some of the things that he's done, and, you know, I'm sure, listen, you can't watch a highlight video of the 24 Yankees without him being all over it, you know? I mean... You know you're going to miss that.
I'm the biggest advocate when it comes to that, right? I've had a lot of talks with Yankee fans when it comes to the signings that we've had and the moves that we've made since losing Soto. When we lost Soto, it was horrible. Of course it was horrible. We only had him for 1 year. We only experienced him for 1 year. And we came up short in the World Series. It would have been nice to, you know, win the World Series and then maybe lose him. It would have maybe lessened the sting a little bit. Yankee fans felt like there was unfinished business. He was going to come back. You know, the AL East and the AL in general is not as strong, and we could have really made, you know, we could have really ran rampant in the AL, you know what I mean, and potentially get to the World Series the next 3 out of 4 years because it just looked like we had the stronghold. Now, I understand that he didn't come back. The Yankees offered him a contract. He didn't come back. Perfectly fine. The moves that the Yankees made, we had no choice. They had to make those moves. Now, the numbers that Bellinger and Goldschmidt are going to put up are going to make up for Soto, hopefully. Yes, I know it's two guys coming into the, you know, making up the production of one. But if they put up the numbers that they had last year, which were mediocre numbers for a guy like Goldschmidt and Bellinger, I'm okay with that. They totaled, between the two of them last year, Mike, 40 homers and 131 RBIs. I'll take that. But we all know, as a baseball fan, forget being a Yankee fan, that Soto is a generational talent. We know that. We know what we lost. If you're a baseball fan and you have knowledge in your brain and you use your head, you know what you lost. But the Yankees did the next best thing. They got the guys that we needed. We showed up the defense. And they're still good hitters too. Bellinger and Goldschmidt are still good hitters by trade. I know Goldie or Oldie, whatever you want to call him. He's going to have his moments. He had a great second half. Hopefully the defense stays there because that's what we really got him for. And he could do better at first than the three bums that we had playing first last year because the numbers were atrocious, like I said. But as a Yankee fan, I know what we lost. I also know what we've gained. Hopefully everything works out. That's all I can say.
And guys, yeah, listen, I get what you're saying. And listen, there were some moves that needed to be made on your behalf that had to be done regardless of whether Soto was back or not. determining on whether what you guys brought in, if Soto had signed or not.
And I know that, and I know this is old news, but they're also former MVPs. Goldschmidt literally won an MVP 3 years ago. Not 33 years ago, 3 years ago at 35. That's impressive, okay? I know he's been on the decline, but he literally won an MVP at 35 in the NL West, all right? So, in the NL Central. That was impressive. So, those are the nitty-gritty divisions, you know, but they beat each other up, and he won an MVP. Bellinger, I know it was 5 years ago, still won an MVP. So, and played in big games. So that to me speaks volumes. I think they're going to both have better years. There's a short porch in right. I think Bellinger's power numbers are going to go up. He's not going to have to deal with the wind in Chicago. I know that sounds crazy, but a lot of balls that you would think were going to leave the park maybe got blown back in, and it affected his numbers. So we'll see. He did hit 26 home runs in 2023. I know he was his power was a little bit better in 2023, and also had almost 100 RBIs. If he could do close to that, I'm perfectly okay with Cody Bellinger on this team filling in for Soto.
Yeah, listen, I think you have to be excited about Bellinger and the potential that he's going to bring. But guys, listen, as far as everything we've covered so far, we want to hear from you. Again, hit us on our Instagram, DiamondDiscussions25. Comment on the post that correlates to this episode. We'd love to read them. Also on our Twitter, same thing, DiamondDiscussions25. Now, I did make a promise halfway through this episode that we were going to address a comment. And I'm coming for you now because there's strike one already. And it's your username, Cowboy Fan for Life. Strike one with me already, pal. No, we're cool. Look, playing games here. But what you did say, and it's regarding to Clay Holmes and some of the things the Mets have done in the past. You said that the Mets didn't view Seth Lugo as a starter, but fans are optimistic about Clay Holmes. Guy hasn't started a game since high school. There's no reason to believe he's going to even come close to 140 innings this year. Okay, first things first. The whole GM, the whole regime that is now was not there when Seth Lugo was let go. I was upset to see Lugo go. I wanted him back because I thought he should have been a starter. So in that sense, I do agree with you. And this is probably why the old regime is not there for mistakes like that, because this guy was unbelievable.
Was that the Brody Van Wagenen era?
Blech. Why would you bring him up? I thought we were friends. Why would you do that?
I literally thought he was the GM that did that because no. He was that asinine to potentially do something like that. So.
No, it was Billy Epler. But going back to this point, I mean, listen, Clay Holmes did make a couple starts in Pittsburgh when he first came up, and he had a couple more starts, not a couple more, but he had starts in the minor leagues when he was coming through the system. I can understand your concern about him not making 140 innings. Look, I know he's not to the same talent as Garrett Crochet, but he did it. So, I think he can. Listen, again, I'm not a fan of your name, but I'm a fan of your comment. So, listen, keep them coming. This is what we want. We want to answer you guys. And, listen, if you guys keep doing this, we might dedicate a whole show to just answering you guys. But, look. Before we go, I'd do a disservice to my team if I didn't bring this up, and I don't want to necessarily end on such a low note, but it's couldn't really find a spot to figure it out, so I'm just going to do it now. Unfortunately, with the Mets organization, we had a big loss. Sarah Seaver, the daughter of Tom Seaver, has unfortunately passed away at the age of 56. She had a long battle with cancer. And, unfortunately...
Your prayers up to the Seaver family. That's some bad news.
Yeah, listen, I've gotten to meet a few of them. I've met Tom once. I've met his wife. I've met a few members of his family, just being at the stadium and being a fan. And from top to bottom, all spectacular people. And, it's a shame to see something like that. But, she was a huge personality. She was a pretty great person. So, it's unfortunate to see that. So, again, our thoughts and prayers are with the Seaver family. But, guys, listen, we thank you again for being along with us for this ride, for another episode, being here again. I can't stress it enough with the Instagram and the Twitter or even just in the comments section of the podcast. Please, we'd love to hear your feedback. Love to hear from you. And thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.